name is Nikki Strong, and this is VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Ashley Thompson.
And I'm Dan Novak. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, John Russell tells us about the role robots are playing in the clothing industry. Faith Perlow presents a new everyday grammar lesson. We close the show with the next part of our U.S. history series. But first, here is John Russell.
Large clothing and technology companies, including Siemens AG and Levi Strauss & Company, are developing robots to make clothes. The process of using robots or computers for human work, known as automation, has raised concerns about jobs for many people around the world. Eugen Solovyov heads an automated clothes manufacturing project at a Siemens lab in San Francisco. "Clothing is the last trillion-dollar industry that hasn't been automated," he said. The worldwide clothing market is estimated to be worth $1.52 trillion, the independent research group Statista says. The idea of using robots to increase manufacturing in the United States grew more popular during the pandemic. COVID-19 interfered with supply chains around the world, highlighting the risk of using distant factories. But moving clothing manufacturing back to Western markets, including the United States, is a sensitive issue. Many clothing companies are unsure about publicly discussing automation. Such reports would cause public concern that automation will take jobs from workers in poor countries. One industry inventor, Jonathan Zorno, said he has received online criticism and a death threat in connection with his work. Sewing, the act of using a needle and thread to make clothes, is especially difficult to automate. Robots do not have the fine touch skill that human hands do. Robots are getting better, but it will take years to fully develop their ability to handle fabric, said five researchers questioned by Reuters. But current research efforts are also looking at doing just enough work by machine to close the cost difference between U.S. and foreign factories. Work at Siemens grew out of efforts to create software to guide robots that could handle all types of materials, such as thin wire cables, said Solovyov. He added that researchers soon realized one of the best targets for automation was clothing. Siemens worked with the Advanced Robotics for Manufacturing, or ARM, Institute in Pittsburgh. They identified a San Francisco company with a promising way to deal with the fabric problem. The startup, Subo Incorporated, hardens or stiffens fabric with chemicals. The hardened fabric is then similar to other material robots can handle, like metal, for example. Once the robots finish sewing the piece, the clothing is washed to remove the chemical. "Pretty much every piece of denim is washed after it's made anyway, so this fits into the existing production system," said Zorno, Subo's inventor. This research effort widened to include several clothing companies, including Levi's and Blue Water Defense LLC, a small U.S.-based maker of military clothes. They received $1.5 million in financing from the ARM Institute to experiment with the technique. There are other efforts to automate sewing factories. Software Automation Incorporated, a startup in Georgia, has developed a machine that can sew clothing by pulling the cloth over a special table, for example. Sanjeev Ball, who opened a small jeans factory called Cytex in downtown Los Angeles 2 years ago, has studied the Subo machines. He is preparing to set up his first experimental machine. At his factory in September, he said that many sewing jobs are ready for a new process. "If it works," he said, "I think there's no reason not to have large-scale jeans manufacturing here in the U.S. again." I'm John Russell.
Last week, we looked at common phrasal verbs and gerunds linked to exercising and health. For this week's Everyday Grammar Report, we will continue to explore exercise vocabulary. We will learn different prepositions, verbs, and nouns we can use when talking about what we do to exercise, and how we use our muscles. Let's start with common prepositional phrases. Two common prepositional phrases we use for talking about physical health is being in shape or out of shape. Another one you will hear is getting back into shape. If you are in shape, you are physically strong and fit. People who are in shape likely exercise regularly and eat well. Adam was so in shape last year. He worked out almost every day. If you are out of shape, you are not physically fit. Out of is used to show a change away from the usual or expected form. Dimitri was out of shape after his knee operation. When you are out of shape, you may want to get back into shape. This means you start doing physical activity to become fit and strong. Brittany's New Year resolution is getting back into shape by doing yoga 3 times a week. When you work out, it is important to do exercises the right way. This helps keep you safe from injury and makes your efforts more effective. You might hear someone tell you to make sure you engage your muscles. The verb engage means to involve. When you engage your muscles, you are using them. Exercise, like yoga, engages your core muscles. A similar verb is activate. This means to make active. When we activate our muscles, we turn on or start to use them. This activation is created by the connection between our brain and muscles. If we activate our muscles for exercise, we can better engage the muscles and use them. It's important to activate your stomach muscles to support your back. Now, let's look at some nouns you can use to talk about your exercise routine. Activities like weightlifting and high-intensity training have special words that describe and differentiate between groups of exercises. A rep, for example, is a shortened form of repetitions. A rep is the number of times you do the movement of an exercise. She did 10 reps of squats. A set is a group of reps. There are usually about 8 to 12 reps in a set. There may be fewer reps if the exercise involves heavier weights. And there may be more if the weights are lighter. After each set, you should rest for a minute or two. I like to do 4 sets of 8 reps of bicep curls. A superset is a combination of exercises in a sequence with no break or rest. So you do 1 set of one kind of exercise, centering on one muscle or group. Then immediately change to the other kind of exercise, centering on a different muscle or group. Our superset today includes chest flies and a tricep dip. A circuit is a combination of 3 or more exercises that you complete back to back, with no rest in between. Circuits combine strength training and cardio. Cardio is any kind of exercise that gets your heart to beat faster and harder for a period of time. I jumped and did push-ups and lunges for my circuit today. An interval is the amount of time you take to do the exercise. We do 2-minute intervals of the circuit before taking a 20-second rest. Finally, a round is how many times you complete a group of circuit exercises. I completed 5 rounds of the circuit before the time finished. Today, we looked at more common expressions for exercise, including the prepositional phrases in shape and out of shape, and verbs like engage and activate. We also looked at the differences between rep, set, and superset, among others. Let's end this report with some homework. Try to make some more sentences with either the verbs, prepositional phrases, or the nouns that we talked about today. You can talk about which muscle or body parts you activate or engage while you work out. Or you can describe your workout routine with nouns like round, interval, or circuit. Share your work in the comments. I'm Faith Perlow.
You just heard Faith Perlow present this week's Everyday Grammar Report. Faith joins me now to talk more about the lesson. Hi, Faith. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Ashley. Thanks for having me.
In this lesson, you looked at phrases and vocabulary people can use when talking about exercising and working out. I was wondering if you could describe your own workout plan and goals.
Of course. I go to the gym every morning. At first, I walk on the treadmill. Walking helps to activate my muscles, and warms me up. Then I lift weights. My favorite exercise is the vertical pull-down machine, which engages my shoulders, back, and arms. I can lift about 100 pounds, but only for 6 reps. I also dance and do yoga. How about you, Ashley? Do you have an exercise routine or workout goals?
My goal is to get stronger in the coming year. Before the pandemic, I biked to work each day and also did a lot of yoga and rock climbing. I have gotten a bit out of shape during the pandemic and also since becoming a mom. I have less time for myself. But I hope to get back into shape by doing yoga and by biking again.
Well, you're always welcome to come to the gym with me. Or we could do a yoga class sometime.
That sounds awesome. Thanks again, Faith, for joining me on today's show.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me, Ashley.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. On a cold and cloudy day in March of 1861, Abraham Lincoln became the 16th President of the United States. In his inaugural speech, the new president announced the policy that he would follow toward the southern states that had left the Union. Lincoln said, no state had a legal right to secede. The Union could not be broken. He said he would enforce federal laws in every state. And he promised not to surrender any federal property in the states that seceded. Lincoln said if force was necessary to protect the Union, then force would be used. His policy was soon tested. Jack Weitzel and Jack Moyles discuss the dispute over the federal base that was being built at Fort Sumter.
On his second day as president, Lincoln received some bad news from Fort Sumter at Charleston, South Carolina. Major Robert Anderson, the commander of the small United States force at Sumter, wrote that his food supplies were low. At most, said Anderson, there was enough food for 40 days. Unless he and his men received more supplies, they would have to leave the fort. Lincoln wanted to keep Fort Sumter. It was one of the few United States forts in the South still held by federal forces, and he had promised not to give up any federal property in the states that seceded.
But getting food to Fort Sumter would be a very difficult job. The fort was built on an island in Charleston Harbor. It was surrounded by southern artillery. Southern gunboats guarded the port. To get supplies to Anderson and his men, a ship would have to fight its way to Sumter. Such a battle was sure to begin a bitter civil war. There also was the danger that fighting would cause slave states still in the Union to secede and join the Southern Confederacy.
The Army Chief, General Scott, warned Lincoln that it was too late to get supplies to Fort Sumter. He said Southern defenses around the fort were so strong that a major military effort would be necessary. He said it would take months to prepare the warships and soldiers for such an effort. Major Anderson and his men at Sumter, he said, could not wait that long. There was another plan, however, that might work. It was proposed to Lincoln by Captain Gustavus Fox of the Navy Department. Captain Fox said soldiers and supplies could be sent down to Charleston in ships. Outside the entrance to the harbor, on a dark night, they could be put into small boats and pulled by tugs to the fort. Fox said a few warships could be sent to prevent southern gunboats from interfering.
Lincoln liked this plan. He asked his cabinet for advice. If it were possible to send supplies to Sumter, he asked, would it be wise to do so? Postmaster General Blair was the only member of the cabinet to answer yes. Treasury Secretary Chase was for the plan only if Lincoln was sure it would not mean war. Secretary of State Seward and the others opposed it. They said it would be better to withdraw Major Anderson and his men. They felt that now was not the time to start a civil war. This opposition in the cabinet caused Lincoln to postpone action on the Fox plan. But he sent two men separately to Charleston to get him information on the situation there. One was Captain Fox. The other was a close friend, Ward Lamon.
In Charleston, Fox met with Governor Pickens. He explained that he wished to talk with Major Anderson, not to give him orders, but to find out what the situation really was. Governor Pickens agreed. A Confederate boat carried Fox to Sumter. Anderson told Fox that the last of the food would be gone on April 15th. Ward Lamon went to Charleston after Fox returned to Washington. He, too, met with Governor Pickens and Major Anderson. The South Carolina governor asked Lamon to give Lincoln this message. Nothing can prevent war except a decision by the President of the United States to accept the secession of the South. If an attempt is made to put more men in Fort Sumter, a war cry will be sounded from every hilltop and valley in the South. Lamon reported to Lincoln that the arrival of even a boatload of food at Sumter would lead to fighting.
At the end of March, Lincoln held another cabinet meeting and again asked what should be done about Fort Sumter. Should an attempt be made to get supplies to Major Anderson? This time, three members of the cabinet voted yes, and three voted no. When the meeting ended, Lincoln wrote an order for the Secretary of War. He told him to prepare to move men and supplies by sea to Fort Sumter. He said they should be ready to sail as early as April 6th, only 1 week away.
On April 4th, Lincoln called Captain Fox to the White House. He told him that the government was ready to take supplies to Fort Sumter. He said Fox would lead the attempt. Lincoln showed Fox a message he was sending to Governor Pickens in South Carolina. It read, "This is to inform you that an attempt will be made to supply Fort Sumter with food only. If this attempt is not opposed, no effort will be made to throw in men, arms, or ammunition." Governor Pickens received the message on April 8th. He immediately sent it by telegraph to Confederate President Jefferson Davis at Montgomery, Alabama. Davis called a meeting of his cabinet to discuss what should be done. He asked if Fort Sumter should be seized before supplies could arrive.
Former United States Senator Robert Toombs of Georgia was the Confederate Secretary of State. He told Davis, "Firing upon that fort will begin a civil war greater than any the world has ever seen. I cannot advise you." Later in the meeting, Toombs urged Davis not to attack the fort. "Mr. President," he said, "at this time it is suicide, murder, and will lose us every friend in the North. You will strike a hornet's nest which extends from mountains to oceans. Millions now quiet will swarm out and sting us to death. It is not necessary. It puts us in the wrong. It will kill us."
On April 10th, Jefferson Davis sent his decision to the Confederate commander at Charleston, General Pierre Beauregard. He told Beauregard to demand the surrender of Fort Sumter. If Major Anderson refused, then the general was to destroy the fort. The surrender demand was carried to Sumter the next day by a group of Confederate officers. They said Anderson and his men must leave the fort, but they could take with them their weapons and property. And they were offered transportation to any United States port they named.
Anderson rejected the demand. As he walked with the Confederate officers back to their boat, he asked if General Beauregard would open fire on Sumter immediately. "No," they said. "He would be told later when the shooting would start." Anderson then told the Southerners, "If you do not shell us to pieces, hunger will force us out in a few days." General Beauregard informed the Confederate government in Montgomery that Anderson refused to surrender. He also reported the major's statement that Sumter had only enough food for a few more days.
New orders were sent to Beauregard. Jefferson Davis said there was no need to attack the fort if hunger would soon force the United States soldiers to leave. But he said Anderson must say exactly when he and his men would leave. And he said Anderson must promise not to fire on Confederate forces. If Anderson agreed to this, then Confederate guns would remain silent. This offer was carried to Fort Sumter a few minutes before midnight, April 11th. Anderson discussed the offer with his officers and then wrote his answer. He would leave the fort on April 15th if the Confederates made no hostile act against Fort Sumter or against the United States flag. He would not leave, however, if before then he received new orders or supplies.
This did not satisfy the three Confederate officers who brought Beauregard's message. They handed Anderson a short note. It said, "We have the honor to inform you that General Beauregard will open fire on Fort Sumter in 1 hour, at 4:20, on the morning of April 12, 1861. The major shook hands with Beauregard's representatives, and they left the fort. Anderson and his officers woke their men and told them to prepare for battle. At Fort Johnson, across the harbor, Confederate gunners also were getting ready. These men would fire the first shot at Sumter. That explosion would signal the other guns surrounding the fort to open fire.
And that's our program for today. Join us again tomorrow to keep learning English through stories from around the world. I'm Ashley Thompson.